Welcome to the Weekly Leader Podcast, episode number 49. I'm Peter Mello from Sea Fever Consulting and the founder and editor of the Weekly Leader blog and podcast. And my podcasting partner, as usual, is Pam Fox Rollin from IdeaShape. And Pam, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be back, although I sure did enjoy last week's podcast.
And we were lucky to have Matt Howard step in. He's been a contributor in the blog, a couple great posts. First one was about running and leadership, and the second one was about fitness and leadership. And if you haven't listened to Matt's podcast, you should. He was the pilot for Marine One, which is the president's helicopter, and he's an interesting guy, and quite a responsible job that is, isn't it? It's hard to imagine.
You know, one thing I've realized for myself is that I want to be very few places where a lapse in attention, a momentary lapse in attention, could cause serious harm to me or others. Of course, I do that every day while driving, but I don't drive the President of the United States.
Yeah.
And I'm just in awe of not only of Matt and what he did, but that they've got this team full of people that he prepares for years for his one super intense year of piloting the president.
Yeah. Pretty incredible and pretty cool customer, too. So I think that's what they look for in somebody like that, for sure. Pam, we have a sponsor. It's GoToMeeting, and they've been with us for a while, and it's a great service. We're talking about flying around, and you can probably avoid a bunch of that, the hassle, the time, the hassle going through security and the time it takes and the expense it takes in using a tool like GoToMeeting to organize your exchanges with people, with clients, with co-workers that might be spread around the globe. So we really appreciate their sponsorship, and they have a great offer for Weekly Leader listeners, a 45-day free trial. Just go over to the website, which is gotomeeting.com/podcast, and you register there, and registration is absolutely simple and painless. It takes, I'd say, 10 seconds to do. You basically give me your email address, and you get a 45-day trial with all the bells and whistles, and you can also, during that 45-day trial period, take one of their webinars, which will really teach you a lot. I did that, and I learned even more about how to use the tool. So it's a great resource for leaders, and at a time when people are trying to use their time more effectively, I can't recommend more a service like GoToMeeting. So check it out, gotomeeting.com/podcast. Bam, leadership in the news. A couple quick items. The Deepwater Horizon is the oil rig that is was on the horizon and now is in deep water in the Gulf of Mexico. Any thoughts about that?
One of the things it's bringing up is, what is the meaning of responsibility and accountability? And how does that play out across a complex network? And you might say, well, this is about as oddly complex as you're going to get. You know, who owns the rig? Who leased it? Who is responsible for the equipment? Who's responsible for inspection? All the different players in cleaning it up. But then our economy is shifting more to this web, this network of sourcing deals and contracts, where you have contracts with companies in other countries where somebody owns the factory, somebody else contracts for the labor force, somebody else contracts for inspection, whatever. So I think there's going to be some tremendous learnings coming out of here about how do you create aligned risk management when you've got a very complex system of contracts and relationships?
Yeah, very interesting.
Let's also link people back to the interview that you did with Thad Allen almost a year ago, because Commandant of the Coast Guard, he is in the news all the time now, and I think the interview that you had gives a great backstory about who this guy is, who now is everywhere in media around the world.
Yeah, and you know, his first kind of experience with everywhere in the media around the world was he was brought in to kind of fix the problems that were as a result of the FEMA response to Katrina, the Hurricane Katrina, and that really he did a bang up job there, and that ultimately brought him to be commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard, and his days are numbered there right now. In fact, Admiral Papp now will be the new commandant of the Coast Guard, and he just became an admiral in the last week or so, and I think the change of command is coming up in the next month or so.
I think he said on the podcast that was a mandatory retirement.
Yeah,
Is
he's
he?
reached an age, I think, where he has to. He will be retiring from the Coast Guard, and he could not stay on. Occasionally, some commandants will stay on for an extra a couple of years, but in his instance, he did tell us that he was not going to be doing that. So, be interesting to see where he ends up next. But he is quite an effective leader. U.S. News and World Report in 2006 named him one of their top U.S. leaders. I think I don't know if they're world leaders, but certainly in response to his efforts at Katrina. So he is. We're very fortunate to have him as our fifth guest, or the guest on our fifth episode, I should say. And it's definitely worth a listen. And he's a guy who uses social media. Has been a huge advocate in the Coast Guard of using these new media, social media tools, new technologies to use to manage and lead people. So interesting interview. The other item I just thought we'd chat about for a second. The UK elections underway. Probably by the time this is podcast hits iTunes, the will be complete. But last week, Gordon Brown, he had a little on mic snafu. Did you hear that?
Always remember, no matter what level of a speaker you are, always remember to notice whether your mic is on before you go to the bathroom or call someone a bigot.
Yeah, you know what? And let's take it in beyond that. No matter what level of leader you are, just wherever you are, it doesn't even have to be a mic. I mean, somebody can hear you around a corner. You just have to be careful about when you have a role as a leader, and I hate to talk about roles, leaders in a, from a role perspective, because I think we advocate most often that it's actually an activity or an ex you something you exercise. But
It's a verb.
and he obviously wasn't really exercising leadership there when he made those comments that he felt were private. Nonetheless, you never know as a leader who might hear or listen, and it's certainly amplified in this instance. But it gives us a teachable moment, I think, as leaders. You don't have to be on mic even for this type of thing to happen to you. It can happen via email. It can happen, just
Which
in a
we're
conference.
seeing with the Fab at Goldman Sachs and a variety of others who probably thought their emails would never be on the front of the New York Times.
Yeah, absolutely. And it can even happen around the water cooler. So, as a leader, just be aware of what you say can have tremendous far-reaching impacts, because it can be heard by people you may not intend it to be heard by. So always be aware. Our website of the week is a relatively new podcast and website. It's called Leader Lab. It's Leader Lab Podcast, and the host is Daniel Berkus. He's the editor of Leader Lab. They characterize themselves as a community of resources dedicated to promoting the practice of leadership theory. Daniel's an executive coach. He's a speaker, and he's an adjunct professor at Oral Roberts University. I think he's going for his PhD in leadership. This week's guest is Steve Farber from Extreme Leadership, and I think he's recently had Marshall Goldsmith and Dan Pink. So he's had some very interesting guests, and encourage you to go check out the podcast. We'll have a link to it in the show notes. Are you familiar with it?
No, so I'm glad to learn of it. I'll give the podcast a whirl.
Yeah, and the website is theleaderlab.org. So check it out. Probably need to have a conversation with him because we own leaderlab.org and a bunch of other Leader Lab URLs that for quite a while that we're waiting to do something with, so hopefully it won't be too much of a conflict. But anyway, we wanted to give a shout out to Daniel and the good work he's doing over there at the Leader Lab podcast. Check it out. Your research report of the week, what do you got?
Well, this is an article called Getting a Return on Judgment. The Financial Meltdown Showed the Limits of Bureaucracy. And it's from two professors out of London Business School, Birkinshaw and Jenkins. It was in Strategy and Business in February. And we'll include a link. It's a short article, 3 pages, in the podcast notes. But it's based on some research that they did about risk management. And how do you get people's behavior aligned with risk management? I mean, I've thought for a long time that one of the flaws that was right at the root of this meltdown is that people who had the opportunity to make decisions all the way through the financial system, from folks at Goldman Sachs who were designing instruments, to people at AIG, to people at just local mortgage brokers. A lot of folks had huge upside for taking risk and very little downside. And either the formal systems failed to capture a real picture of the risk they were taking, or that they just simply weren't in place. And the informal systems, which this article argues are even more important, weren't in place either. And partly why I selected this article is because right now there's a lot of focus in the news with Goldman about really how did this stuff get going. And I think it's going to be a great lesson for all of us in how our financial institutions work, but also because of the interview that we'll have later in the podcast that you did with Lynn about millennials. And because I think that their three prescriptions actually work really well for what we're learning about the millennial generation. So what they say is, to manage risk really well, you want to align decision making with information in a way that really has individuals accountable, but within a network of collaborative, well-informed groups of people. And so their three prescriptions are: one, high quality insight, which means putting the right information in the hands of those that are making a decision and rapidly transforming that information into insight using the expertise of people around you. In other words, so one person can have information. They can either figure out how to game the system, or if some of the financial actors are as dumb as they now facing lawsuits would like us to believe, they don't turn that information into insight and make snap judgments. But in other words, you take the information and you say, what does this mean? And when you say, what does it mean, you get a team around you, a SWAT team of people who say, hey, here's what I think it means. What do you think it means? What did it, rather than having it just localized to that one person at their desk. Marry that, number two, with personal accountability. So if you're in charge of managing risk, you need to be able to feel the hits up and down of that risk. And three, a culture that encourages employees to keep sight of the big picture. And they reference Carl White's excellent work on high reliability organizations, which are folks like nuclear power plants and aircraft carriers, where you can't afford mistakes. So let's say offshore, right, deep water oil drilling rigs, right? And so everybody needs to have the big picture. And if you don't have that, then you have people making suboptimal decisions throughout the organization that can have these really huge consequences if low probability, high risk events occur. So I think it's worth a read. Anybody who's responsible for working with risk will want to have this. And, you know, as you listen to the interview with Lynn, think about what millennials are bringing to the table in terms of a eagerness to work collaboratively, an eagerness to hear the expertise of others and contribute their own expertise, and see, you know, how those broadly painted skills of that generation might work really well in this sort of new risk management scenario.
What is your password? Your password has been accepted.
Plugged into a stream of real-time data. Cyborg soldier, a techno warrior. Computer, camera, optical display, all connected to the World Wide Web.
Personal cybernetic technology, personal cybernetic.
Pioneering the computerized lifestyle. The World Wide Web. The World Wide Web.
Hi, this is Wally Bach with a look at the independent business blogs and your question of the week. Every week, I identify five excellent posts from the independent business blogs. Those are blogs that aren't either staff-written or sponsored by a firm or educational institution. Here are my picks for this week. Everybody runs into problems in their life and career. The good news is that we know about some common ones and we can do something about them. Scott Eblen posts on 3 dozen situations most executives will face during a career. Rob Tucker at Reading About Leading has a great post on Education 2.0. If you've ever wondered what to do if you're the inside candidate when your company is looking for an outsider, you'll benefit from the post, Why Are Outsiders Paid More? Just pull up a chair and read at the Compensation Cafe. I work in teams. You work in teams. Business is a multi-team game. That's why Steve Rossler's post, What to Look For in Teams, is so helpful. Every now and then a post hits me with what Tom Peters calls a blinding flash of the obvious. That's what happened when I read Mary Jo Asmus' post, Listening is Action. Listening doesn't happen by accident. You have to make it so. And now for the question of the week. It's sparked by Mary Jo's excellent post. Are you doing everything you can to listen when somebody talks to you? Really? Thanks for listening. You can find more of my pointers and commentary on the 3-Star Leadership blog. It's at http://blog.3starleadership.com. I'm also on Twitter, and I'll see you here next week.
Initiating shutdown sequence.
Our weekly leader this week is Lynn C. Lancaster, and she's a co-author with David Stillman of a new book called The M Factor, How the Millennial Generation is Rocking the Workplace. So let's give a listen to Lynn. Well, today we're very fortunate to be speaking with Lynn Lancaster, and she's one of the authors of a new book called The M Factor, How the Millennial Generation is Rocking the Workplace. Hi, Lynn. How are you today?
I'm great, and I really appreciate the chance to chat about The M Factor.
It's great. An exciting book, and one I think that's of interest to a lot of people out there in the business world who are trying to figure it all out. So would you give us, actually tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do and how you got to be writing a book like The M Factor. What's your background?
Well, my business partner, David Stillman, and I are generational experts, and sometimes we call ourselves cultural translators because we've been studying the generations for 14 years and trying to figure out why they sometimes click and why they sometimes collide in the workplace, uncover the generation gaps, try to quantify the cost of some of these gaps, for example, in recruitment or retention or morale or building a team, and then what leaders need to do to bridge those gaps and create a more effective, efficient, committed workforce. And we do that in a number of ways. We've been doing lots and lots of research and writing about the generations. We've written 2 books. We're out there speaking to companies all the time. We do a lot of keynote speeches, training, and just finding all the different ways we can to get companies really engaged in figuring out the talent they have at work and the generational mix they need to have and then how they can make it work better.
And then what brought you to the M Factor? What the book just came out to in April, is that right?
Yeah, just debuted in April. It's already in its second printing, which we're thrilled about. HarperCollins is our publisher. And a few years ago, we wrote a book that did very well called When Generations Collide, still in print. It's interestingly, Harper just told us it's still selling more every single year than it did the year before. And I think that really speaks to the idea that the generational issues have continued to be pressing for leaders, that to really be a talent-focused organization, we need to understand generational differences so that we can do better at recruiting and retention. And then to follow it up, a few years ago, we pitched a book on the millennials to our agent and to our publisher, and they said, they're still in middle school and high school and college. Nobody wants to hear about them yet. So we thought, wow, but it's going to be such a huge topic. And then last year, they said, yeah, we're kind of ready to go. Let's do a book on the millennials. Interestingly, we thought, well, how do we get our arms around a huge generation? And we interviewed dozens and dozens of millennials one-on-one. We did focus groups, and then we fielded a huge national survey of all the generations. And what we found was that some trends emerged, and so we wrote our book around those seven trends.
And what are the trends?
Well, the trends we uncovered are trends that have really shaped the millennials as a generation, and they're trends that we think the millennials are bringing with them into the workplace and are going to eventually reshape the way a lot of us work. For example, their use of social networking or their search for meaning. That was one thing that came out over and over again, is I want to have a good job and make money, but I want to find something that has meaning for me where I feel like I'm making a difference. So the search for meaning. The role of the parents, that has really shifted since baby boomers were being parented and Gen Xers. The role of the parents in coaching millennials and in helping them find that first job and even helping them navigate once they're hired, that was astonishing to us. What a huge percentage of companies reported that parents were integrally involved, sometimes over-involved. Another thing we call great expectations, the idea that millennials are coming into the workplace with a lot of expectations for what it's going to be like, and quite often those don't match the expectations that employers have, and we see disappointment on both sides. How do we manage that? The need for speed, they're picking up the pace in everything we do. And also collaboration, the very communicative, collaborative generation, and they're looking for collaborative leaders, not top-down leaders who are going to say, you know, I say jump, you say how high. They're looking for leaders who will sit down around the table and engage them in leadership.
It's interesting. I mean, there seems to be a lot recently in Main Street media about this generation and parental involvement, which I think for a lot of executives, a lot of managers, it really presents almost a nightmare scenario, and you've presented a few of those in the book where parents do get really, really involved, not only in school choices, college admissions and even course selection choices, but even after that into the workplace. And your book is probably a good tool for those people who are kind of afraid of what they read in the media.
Yeah. We conducted a huge national survey last year with I4CP, the Institute for Corporate Productivity, and one of the findings was that 40% of all of our respondents said they had personally witnessed a parent getting involved in an employee's career in a way that seemed out of line.
Wow.
Pretty big number. And so we're asking companies to consider, A, how do you deal with this when it happens? One tactic is we have to make sure that human resource professionals and supervisors and managers are prepared. What are the appropriate ways to deal with that parent who calls up after the millennial gets a bad job review or even shows up at orientation? You have to know how to deal with that. But I think the bigger question is, this is a real shift to where parents are more involved all the way through school and college and into that first career. Our question is, instead of being sort of horrified, how can we put the parents to work? Can we view parents as an ally in making sure that we do a good job recruiting and retaining those employees? For example, C.H. Robinson, one of our clients that we featured in the book, they've created what they call parent packs. And when they make an offer to a millennial for that first job, they also send out a packet to the parents saying, hey, welcome to our world. And what they find is that's a great recruiting tool because the parents are going to be involved in that decision whether or not to accept the first job. And they figure, why not put the parents to work on our side?
Wow.
Huh. Yeah.
But what about boundaries?
You're thinking outside the box.
Yeah. It's interesting, though. But what about boundaries and limits? Like, how? When do these millennials actually get out of the nest and fly on their own?
Well, that's a tough question for boomers because a lot of us boomers were so eager to get out of that nest and so resistant to having our parents meddling in our lives and certainly never wanted to move back home. And we're seeing a really different trend with millennials. Millennials like their parents. And they love hanging out with them. In survey after survey, they, when asked to name their top mentor or their best friend, they put their parents number one. Mm. So it's no wonder that they want their parents to be involved and apprised of what's going on at work. The challenge is that we don't want to get caught by surprise. I mean, so there are policies. Obviously, if someone calls to discuss a person's job or career progress, and that person is an adult, just by the basic of good policies, we're not allowed to get out that information. So that's pretty simple. The harder thing is trying to get people to operate a little bit more independently, and there are going to be instances where leaders need to say, hey, I know you're used to having a lot of coaching and a lot of help and a lot of supervision. I want you to take this project and show some independence and really run with it. So I'd like you to get to these landmarks before you come back and check in with me and show what you can do. Even if you make a mistake, it's okay. Because we're finding this is a generation that likes to check in very frequently. Am I on the right track? Am I doing okay? How's it going? And that's great. But we'd also like to see them show a little bit more of that entrepreneurial spirit. Like, I can do this.
We spent quite a bit of time on the podcast talking about the changing nature, the shift of work itself, how things are evolving. And we've interviewed Dan Pink, the author of Drive, and Nilufer Merchant, the author of The New How, and spent a lot of time discussing this. And it seems like this generation is actually well suited to those changes, which is more collaboration, less command and control. Mm-hmm. So, what do you think about that?
Yeah, that you make such a great point, and I think that what's happened with millennials is we've been collaborating with them their whole lives. We have a style of parenting that's very communicative. So, we're going to get together around the dining room table and discuss as a family how you should be punished, right? We collaborate, and right. We involve them in family decisions. If we're going to go to Best Buy to buy technology, guess who's going along with us to help make decisions? We're taking a 10-year-old, right?
Yeah.
We're planning a family vacation. Who's on the web searching out the discount tickets to Disneyland and looking for a hotel with a really fun swimming pool? A 9-year-old. Right? We're engaging them in deciding. We give them a voice. We ask them their opinions. And we talk to them about everything. I was talking to a group of leaders in technology the other day, and they were all baby boomers. And I said, how many of you could think of something that was off limits to discuss with your parents? And they thought of lots of things. I mean, our traditionalist parents, they didn't talk about sex or politics or death or money or a whole host of things. And I think partly as a response to that, we talk to our millennial kids about just about everything. So we're involving them, we're engaging them, we're communicating with them, we collaborate. And then they show up at work and they're told, oh, you can't come to that meeting, you're not at a high enough level.
Hmm.
Or they're told, well, you can come to the meeting, but you need to sit in the back and be sure not to say anything.
Interesting.
And they're like, dude, I've been running the household. So it's a bit of a mismatch, and they're looking for collaboration. And when we interviewed millennials, they said, I know I don't get to make the final decision on things. I just want to feel I have a voice and that my ideas are being heard.
So what do they think about leadership per se, the concept of leadership, and what are their aspirations, do you think, from that perspective?
Well, it's hard to encapsulate the aspirations of a whole generation.
Sure.
And, of course, when we're writing and researching, we're trying our best not to stereotype. But I think when you have a generation who likes and appreciates their parents and their coaches and their teachers and look up to those role models and enjoy interacting with them, then we have a generation that's going to come into the workplace and look up to those leaders and say, what can I learn from you? So that's a positive. I think Gen Xers came in a lot more skeptical of leaders. You know, during the formative years of Generation X, and this is the generation born 1965 to 81, during their formative years, they saw every major American institution called into question, from the presidency to the military to organized religion to corporate America. And they felt very skeptical of institutions. They came in and looked at leaders and said, wow, can I trust you? Are you going to disappoint? Are you going to be indicted? And that skepticism's been hard for people to deal with, whereas I think we now have a generation coming in and say, wow, I want to get to know my leader. One of the millennials we hired last year had come to us from General Mills. Her first week on the job at General Mills, she emailed the CEO of General Mills and invited him out to lunch.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a generation that's not afraid or too worried about hierarchy, and it's a generation that wants to know their leaders, and that's why we're seeing a lot more leaders doing things like writing their own blogs and not just talking in their blogs about the state of the company, but talking about their ideas, even about their personal lives.
So what happened? Did she ever have that lunch?
Well, it was interesting. She wrote to him and said, she said, I'm a new hire, and I'm a millennial, and I had such a fantastic experience with your onboarding process. I wanted to tell you all about it. And he ended up actually hosting a leader lunch with a lot of millennial new hires, where he spoke to them, and he did Q&A, and he did chatting with them so that they could connect.
Was her email the catalyst for that?
I'm sorry?
Was her email the catalyst for that?
You know, I'm not sure. I think what happened was he had actually heard from more than one millennial. And he thought, wow, maybe we need to do some cross-pollinating here. Because millennials don't have a real hang-up about hierarchy. You know, for baby boomers, of course, boomers born 1946 to 64, there's 80 million of us all kind of trying to compete for that next promotion. We were very politically savvy, and we didn't want to step out of line because we had a lot of peers competing with us for that next job. So for a baby boomer, we knew you'd never go over your boss's head to say something to your boss's boss. You could get in a lot of trouble.
Sure.
Whereas for millennials, they've been raised in a flatter world. You know, they call their parents' friends by their first names. They might wear blue jeans to church. They have their professors' personal email addresses at college. So it's a flatter world. And they love to have access to leaders. One of the companies we profiled in our book, U.S. Bank, CEO Richard Davis has instituted a special program that he calls the Dynamic Dozen. And he's created a panel of a dozen millennials who they pull together to comment and talk about new product offerings or new policies within the bank. It's the same idea, wanting to kind of hear the voice of the millennials and letting millennials know that their voice is valued.
What's next? We have this M factor, this M generation. You guys are experts about this type of thing. What do you see going next? I mean, it just seems, how far does this trend go? Or do you see that at some point there's a reversal, a direction?
For the millennials, or you mean for the next generation?
For the next generation. I know you don't have a crystal ball over there, but you got a
we
few
wish
books
we had
about
one. First of all, we're very excited about the millennials, and this is a generation that's had a lot of knocks. They're spoiled, they're affluent, they're whiners, they're job hoppers, they're entitled, the entitled generation. We're very excited about this generation. They've been volunteering in record numbers. They have a lot to offer. They've already had a lot of different life experiences even before they come to us in the workplace. And they're a generation that knows the world has hard problems, and they are excited to step up and see if they can make a difference. So I'm very excited about the millennials. As far as the next generation, they don't have a name yet. We're trying to think about what they should be called, but we feel like we need to get to know them first. One interesting thing, two of the great writers about the generations, Strauss and Howe, actually wrote a book called The Fourth Turning. And in it, one of their ideas is that there are four generational archetypes that repeat throughout history. And if that's true, then this next generation that's been born since the year 2000 is going to repeat. It's going to be like our traditionalist generation.
Okay.
You know, a lot of our parents and grandparents with patriotism and loyalty to institutions and solid work ethic and putting aside the needs of the individual to serve the greater good, that's going to be really interesting to see if that theory holds true.
Interesting. So if you have one or two pieces of advice for a boomer like me who's got to deal with this generation and might be you know, not necessarily intimidated, but just might just come in with preconceived mm-hmm. ideas. What are a couple pieces of advice for a manager?
Well, of course, self-servingly, I'd say read about it.
Of course.
There are good generational books out there that kind of give you a grounding in where in the heck is this generation coming from. And ours is called The M Factor. But the idea behind it is, instead of being sort of horrified by, oh my goodness, what's the world coming to, we've got to dive in. We've got to dive in and get to know the next generation, because we're now hiring this big pool of talent and we want them to stay. We want to find the best and the brightest and get them in the door. And find ways not just to hire them, but to really engage them in our work. We're looking at 80 million baby boomers getting ready to retire. We're going to see a lot of brain drain. In many areas around the globe, we already have worker shortages in technology, math, science, engineering. We are going to have to find a way to get people engaged with our mission. That means we got to learn their hot buttons. What's going to get a millennial excited about our work? I'd also say, when you see a millennial that maybe seems a little intimidating, maybe they're just faster paced or they know more about technology, put them to work mentoring us.
Sure.
I think we were raised in a world where mentoring was always top down. And millennials were raised in a world where they were mentoring their parents on everything from how to program the VCR to how to set up their new printer. So millennials are ready, willing, and able to mentor us right back. And we need to get over that perfectionistic baby boomer complex where we say, I should look like I know everything because I want to get ahead. And we need to say, hey, I don't know how to do that. Can you come to my office later today and show me? And they are more than happy to help, but we've got to get past our own roadblocks about admitting we don't know something.
Great advice. Definitely great advice. Each weekly leader, we ask a couple of questions, and I didn't give you a heads up on this, but let's try it anyway. what are you currently reading yourself? What's on your nightstand?
Well, I just got a manuscript from a book that's going to be coming out soon called The Truth About Leadership by Jim Kouzis and Barry Posner, which is going to be a great read, and it's kind of pulling us all back to what we really believe about leaders and leadership. So
Right. Watch
for that book. It'll be coming out in the next few months. And I have a great, great friend and mentor who I've known for 20, 25 years, and that's Harvey McKay. His new book just came out, which I'm thoroughly enjoying. It's called Use Your Head to Get Your Foot in the Door, and it's the ultimate guide to finding a job.
Great.
And he's done his usual brilliant approach to making it funny and anecdotal and positive and great. So I'm loving both those books.
Excellent. And the other question we ask is, you're a busy person. You only have time to have a lunch with a historic or contemporary leader. Mm-hmm. And it would be you and that person. And who would it be, and what would you want to take away from that experience?
Interestingly, I just heard Condoleezza Rice speak. She's now a professor at Stanford. Honestly, I was so stunned by her, what a brilliant speaker she is, and how thoughtful and how willing she is to kind of ruminate on history and what are some of the decisions that they made during the Bush administration that she felt were in error, and what were some of the things they did very, very well. I'd love to pick her brain more about recent history.
Great.
You know, how were decisions made? Where did things go wrong? Where were things right? She's so brilliant and clear-headed. I'd love to continue that conversation. Listening to her for an hour wasn't enough.
Well, that sounds excellent. It's a new one to add to our list. So how do people find you or get in touch with you? You do speaking engagements and consulting, and tell us.
Yeah, we've kind of pioneered something unusual. You can find us at generations.com, and of course our book is in all the bookstores right now, and it's also online on Amazon and some of the other online places called The M Factor. But yeah, we do something unusual in the speaking world. We have a multi-generational speaker team. And so you can bring us in for a speech or workshop or for a keynote or a seminar in your organization to talk about your issues, your talent issues, your generational challenges. And we speak individually, but I also have my Gen X business partner who I speak with. We do kind of he says, she says, boomer Xer. And we also have millennials speaking now, and that's really fun. We're also putting together a new program called Millennial Readiness, which is a program that's going to be taught to millennials coming into corporations on what do they need to know about the other generations to survive and thrive in that corporate environment.
Great.
So that's a fun new offering. And we have, which is really unusual, we have a corporate entertainment show. It's a comedy show about the generations. And it's done by a professional comedian. It's delightful. And you can see more about that on our website, too, again, at generations.com.
Wow, you sound pretty busy, Lynn. You got a lot of things going on.
It's fun things, though, so it doesn't seem as busy.
Thank you so much for sharing your time with us and your experience about the millennial generation. And we'll have links to all of to the book and your company in the show notes. And wish you a lot of luck with it.
Oh, thanks so much, Peter. It's been a really fun ride, and I just appreciate your willingness to chat about it. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Okay, Pam, that was Lynn, and I enjoyed doing that interview with her, and I'd like to thank Lynn. She's introduced us to some really interesting people we hope to have on the podcast in the near future as well. So what were your thoughts about oh, by the way, I have a copy of the book, and an extra copy of the book I'd like to give away to a weekly leader listener or reader of the website. So really all you have to do is go over to Facebook if you are on Facebook and like the post about the M Factor, and we'll put your name for the book. And if you're not on Facebook, just go to the website and leave a comment in the podcast post, and we'll add your name to that contest as well.
By website, you mean weeklyleader.net?
That's the one. Yeah, go check out the website, definitely.
Excellent. Yeah, I really liked it. I have the book on my Amazon Kindle app on my iPhone and have been reading through it. Lots of good insights in there. It's really, really excellent. There's another book in that space that I like, but that takes a slightly different perspective. It's from Lisa Orell, who's local here in San Jose. It's called Millennials into Leadership. And she takes the flip side of it, which is it's for the millennials as they start to step into leadership roles and is a guidebook for them. And I think the two of them pair together really nicely to have both of those books, to the deep understanding of the generations that Lynn has and the coaching guidance from Lisa.
Yeah, definitely. I really enjoy the book. I highly recommend people pick it up and check it out. And we thank again Lynn for spending time with us and introducing us to some other interesting leadership thinkers.
Actually, one more thought on millennials, because one of the teams that I spent a lot of time with last week just grew by like 35% in the last few months, and they have now a few folks that qualify as millennials. It's a team that really most people need to be quite experienced to get onto, but they're starting to get some of the millennial folks and folks in their earlier and mid-20s. And I was so impressed with the energy, of course, but also the just willingness to step forward and say, I'll take on that initiative. Great. You know, I'll rally people around. And I just loved the spirit of the group. And I think it's going to, coming out of that offset, is going to create some conversation about how do we harness and make the most of their readiness to step forward while infusing those initiatives with the expertise that's already resident in the organization.
You have any other closing thoughts about leadership?
I'm just really glad, Peter, that a week and a half ago I got the first draft of my book to the editor, which felt like a really big milestone. So that'll be 42 Rules for Your New Leadership Role, and I am looking forward to the editing process, beginning viewers, all of that. But mostly I'm looking forward to getting the book in the hands of people where I hope it will be useful.
Well, I'm sure it will be. We look forward to having it here, using it on the podcast, maybe giving away a few free copies.
Sounds good.
Sounds good. We love it when you join us in the Leadership Conversation, and we try to give you lots of ways to do that. So head on over to the website, which is weeklyleader.net, and find the podcast post. Give some feedback about what you heard here or what you might like to hear in the future. And then also check out all the great posts we have by our team of really talented bloggers who are passionate about the subject of leadership. And they would love to hear from you as well, so engage them over there. You can always send your comments to us at podcast@weeklyleader.net. And if you wanted to submit an audio comment, you could attach a MP3 file of 5 meg or less, and we'll find a way to integrate it into the show. Let's give that a try. We have a Facebook page, which all of a sudden we didn't do much with, and now we're doing more stuff with. And you, like I said, you can like the post about the M Factor over there, and it'll enter you into a contest to win the book. Well, so if you haven't liked us yet and you're on Facebook, we'd appreciate it if you check that out. It's a good community over there to be part of. We're on Twitter. Weekly Leader is at Weekly Leader. Pam, what's your Twitter ID?
Pam F. R.
Yeah, and I'm Peter Mello. That's P-E-T-E-R-M-E-L-L-O. And all of our other contributors' Twitter IDs will also be in the show notes. If you use iTunes, we really appreciate it if you rate and review the podcast. We haven't had one in a while, but we do have 9 all very positive reviews, so we'd love to get yours over there as well. So check it out. It'll get us more listeners, and that's always a good thing. We appreciate you supporting our sponsors. GoToMeeting, check out their 45-day free trials, gotomeeting.com/podcast. And we also have a widget on the blog for the Wall Street Journal. If you subscribe to the Wall Street Journal, we get a little from that. Check it out. I've been subscribing to the Wall Street Journal for probably about 25, 30 years, and it's a must-read for me every morning, and should be for you if you're a student of leadership as well. So we know how valuable your time is, and we really appreciate you investing it with us. And Pam, I look forward to being with you again next week and talk about leadership.
Hi, this is Nadia Kazmi, and I'm proud to be a PodSafe artist.
Underneath my feet, the street is passing by. Melody is falling from sky. As it slides each note, traces hidden lines of your lips, your eyes, the way you move. Then it ends again, you know, it starts, it stops, it moves, it grows. It's just a verse. Close.